And we continue at 2:07, Talk Radio 790 KABC, the John Phillips Show, broadcasting live from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the County of Los Angeles for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, we are now in the second Thursday in a row without a weekly press briefing from the fake doctor.
Next slide.
And if you happen to watch LA County USC's Real Dosters yesterday in Soothiness Wednesday, I think I know why.
Good morning, everybody. Soothiness Wednesday, the most soothing thing of all. We ain't even doing a COVID report no more because ain't no COVID we got no more.
That, of course, is Dr. Brad Spellberg, a real doctor.
Now, if that's the case, then the only way the fake doctor is going to get back in the news is if she goes streaking at Dodger Stadium on opening day.
I really hope everyone finished their lunch in the 1 o'clock hour today.
The evidence is like crystal clear on that.
It's okay if you're listening to it on the radio.
I've got the image in my head now. You know what? Actually, let's keep that. I might actually get under 279.
I have a hard time understanding.
Oh, dear. Well, we're in the 2 o'clock hour. So we're at that time of the show, Randy, where we don't know if my voice is going to stay or go.
Well, if your voice goes, we could just have Ben Shapiro come on early.
Quite frankly.
It almost went. I think it did actually go the last two segments of the Monday show.
Yeah, but that's Cecily Meyer Cruz's fault. Just listening to her grade your own voice.
Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday!
You know, there are parents out there who say that they wish that they could absorb whatever pain it is that their children are feeling. I don't know why I have this deal with Cecily Meyer Cruz, but she screams and I feel the pain.
And I want you to be all the way pissed off.
Oh, trust me, I am.
That woman is a Nazi bitch.
800-222-KABC is the phone number. 1-800-222-5222. The classics never get old, Randy.
It's going to be so sad when all the teachers have to stop striking and go back to work tomorrow.
Oh, it's going to be such a mundane existence. All right. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a man who knows more about the Atlanta Braves than just about anyone on the planet who doesn't take their paycheck from TBS. He's also the chief pollster at the Trafalgar Group. You can get him online at thetrafalgargroup.org and follow him on Twitter at Robert Cahaley. Robert Cahaley, welcome.
How you doing?
I'm good. Did you go down for spring training this year?
No, I'm not really a spring training guy. It's hard enough to get all my games out of 82. I can't handle it anymore.
Okay. Can only put so much booze in the shot glass.
That's right. Yeah. When you go to the games in Atlanta, it's easy because you're there. Spring training means taking time off.
That's true. All right. Well, let's talk a little politics, which is another sport that we follow pretty closely here, because even though we're a couple of years away from the actual voting, it seems like we are in the thick of the 2024 presidential election, or at least the primaries, because Donald Trump has been going after Florida Governor Ron DeSantis pretty much nonstop over the last several weeks, more so against DeSantis than against Joe Biden. And we've also seen a Democratic candidate throw their hat in the ring in the Democratic primary with Marianne Williamson, the creation of Oprah Winfrey, who says that she's going to run in the Democratic primary against Joe Biden. I doubt Marianne Williamson has any shot at beating Joe Biden, but Ron DeSantis clearly does pose a threat to Donald Trump. The question is, how much of a threat?
Well, you know, that one is really changing. We're going to have a new national poll out for the Republican primary, I think early next week, and we're going to have it divided into two sections before the talk of Trump being arrested and after. But what I can tell you in general in the last few months, starting probably when he went to visit Ohio, Trump has really got kind of upward swing. He's just had a lot of things kind of fall into place for him, whether it was the quote unquote scandal of the documents. All of a sudden, you know, Biden and Pence have them too. Not such a big deal. The Georgia grand jury, you got the crazy grand jury foreman lady kind of discrediting that. And then this that was kind of out there has been another thing that is being discredited pretty fast, with most Republicans in unanimity calling it out on its face. These are big Trump hurdles. Then, of course, January 6th, the Tucker Carlson revelation with all the footage. I mean, some of the biggest Trump hurdles have been kind of being knocked down for the guy.
And he's been throwing some serious haymakers at Ron DeSantis, too.
Absolutely. And creating some questions that nobody else had. If you're trying to be a MAGA candidate, if you're trying to get into that audience, then Trump has figured out that connecting you to Paul Ryan and that stuff can make MAGA people doubt your sincerity. And that's the message.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
See, of all the things he's thrown at DeSantis that has a little stick, it's like this idea that DeSantis might secretly be backed by the establishment really is going to be effective with a lot of these conservative MAGA type voters.
Let's assume for a second that Trump's attacks on DeSantis stick and that DeSantis's numbers start to evaporate. Does that then create an open field for all of the non-Trump candidates, where a Glenn Youngkin or a Tim Scott or a Nikki Haley could potentially catch fire? Or the minute that DeSantis starts to go down in the polls, all of his people go to Trump and it's over before it starts?
Well, there's still a significant amount of the vote that is either undecided or not for DeSantis or Trump. I mean, it's not a huge amount, and they're going to consolidate behind somebody. But when you look at it, most Trump people are going to be with Trump. When we take it and we ask questions like, have either one of them not in the race, what we find is there are a lot of Trump people, if Trump wasn't running, who would go to DeSantis. But there are not a lot of DeSantis people who would go to Trump if DeSantis wasn't running. Because what DeSantis has done is he has a natural base among the Trump people who would back him absent Trump. But a lot of people who are just anti-Trump see DeSantis as their vehicle. So I would say probably more than half DeSantis support would not go to Trump. It would filter down to other non-Trump candidates, but there is a small base with the Republicans who just want somebody other than Trump. But when you put them to the test, all right, if Trump were the nominee, it's election day and it's Biden versus Trump, how are you going to vote? 90% of Republicans say Trump. So I think that there is a significant amount of DeSantis support that would filter down to the other candidates, but as long as there are a bunch of them, it would kind of, you know, come down in different slots. But, you know, nobody has actually kind of run openly hostile to Trump in the primary yet. I mean, certainly Nikki Haley is not a Trump person. We all know that. But she hasn't thrown barbs at him either.
As I look at the map, and I'm trying to figure out a way that Ron DeSantis could potentially win this, I say to myself, the people that he appeals to most are people like me. Blue state Republicans who are absolutely frustrated all through the shutdowns, because I lived in a state with a governor who shut down the schools and shut down the beaches and shut down the businesses and forced me to go on house arrest for almost 2 years and didn't follow their own rules, was caught time and time and time again going to the French Laundry, going on vacation, doing all kinds of things that they weren't supposed to be doing. And I looked to Florida as the beacon of light. I looked at Florida where the schools were open, the businesses were open. There was no state of emergency that eliminated the separation of powers. They respected their state constitution. And I said to myself, why can't we have that in California? And I think there are a lot of people in places, not just like California, but New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Oregon, Washington, you name it, who look at Ron DeSantis and they say to themselves, this guy was the guy that knew what was going on during COVID better than anyone else, faster than everyone else, and that guy should be rewarded. Can you win a Republican primary, though, if your appeal is pretty much limited to blue state Republicans?
Not a chance. The problem is the way the Republican calendar works. I mean, frankly, it, you know, just all nonsense aside, there's only one state that matters. It's South Carolina. No one's ever lost South Carolina and gone on to be president, period. No exceptions. So whoever wins there is going to be the nominee. So it's just a matter of, you know, Iowa and New Hampshire may split, but, you know, South Carolina is what matters. But even if you could somehow build a strategy that didn't do that, which, of course, would break all precedent, when you look at the states that are going to vote, it is the Republican primary has turned into pretty much a primary for whoever wins that big block of votes in the South, because that's where the Republican strength are in the primary. But I think that this appeal – this appeal you're talking about is the Senate. That and all the other things DeSantis is doing is his absolute strength. But in the end, a nasty battle between DeSantis and Trump probably results in a Biden president reelection, period. It's very hard to divide this party. If DeSantis stays in the quote-unquote MAGA lane, where he's still advocating the same things as Trump, and he's not, quote-unquote, secretly backed by a bunch of establishment types. But if he runs that way, then dividing those people really kind of puts the Republican Party in a very big disadvantage in the fall. So of 2024. So
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
It really is, you know, it kind of a scary scenario to have these two titans running against each other, because DeSantis is by all means and by all measures just outstanding governor and the model of what you want, kind of leadership that you want in the presidency.
Is he making a mistake by getting involved in all the culture war issues? And I say that because, to my eye, what he's doing is muddying the waters. he is the guy that kept his state open during COVID and told Anthony Fauci to go to hell. And if I'm that guy, I want everyone in the country to know that that's who I am and that's what made me famous. And by involving myself in other endeavors, you just create more noise that takes away from that emphasis that I think is the winner.
But if you don't, but here's the other thing. If you don't take a stand in the culture wars, it's really hard to win a Republican primary. Because when you get right down to it, most of the Republicans feel very much the same about how, you know, and most issue positions like COVID and response. When you start looking at all these guys, they feel very much the same way. But if you're trying to, if your goal and DeSantis' goal, I think, would be to defeat Trump. If you're trying to defeat Trump, the way you do it, the way you earn their love, is some of these culture war fights. Because when you get right down to it, that's the part that scares them the most. COVID's in the past, but when they look at the future, when they look at the encroachment of you know, China's control of big corporations and pushing agendas like Disney, like, I mean, these kind of things, and with this corporate mindset of the ESG and all these things, that's the stuff that makes conservatives worry about that future.
Well, if you're right on that, and maybe you will be, then I think it's going to be very difficult for Ron DeSantis to beat Donald Trump. Because if COVID is an afterthought, you're taking his best tool out of the toolbox.
Maybe. But it's, the thing is, you know, it's kind of what's right in front of your face. And people remember and were mad. But, you know, you would have thought there was no Greg Gretchen Whitmer could get reelected. But they throw abortion on the statewide referendum. And, you know, that was what was right in front of their face. And a lot of people look at DeSantis and they see the COVID stuff, but they really also see just the wide neighbor of DeSantis, this whole thing about winning. That's the biggest thing that motivates Republicans, is they want to win in November of 2024. So when he talks about winning, and he threw that in the answer he gave about Trump and the nickname, he gets that because that's what Republicans want. Every Republican who likes Trump's ideas but isn't for him says, I would be for him, but I am scared he'll lose. So this idea of being a winner, of picking fights and winning, of growing the Republican numbers and winning places like Miami-Dade, this is a big part of his argument, and I think this is one of his more effective arguments, even more than the COVID response.
Robert Cahaley, chief pollster at the Trafalgar Group. You can get him online at thetrafalgargroup.org and follow him on Twitter at Robert Cahaley. Robert Cahaley, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Absolutely. Y'all have a great day.
Okay, you too. So we are in day three of the UTLA teacher strike.
Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
And how weird would this be, Randy, if they go back to work tomorrow and there's still no deal?
That's what's going to happen. There isn't a deal yet.
You think the district's going to cave tonight?
They could, but either way, this strike is going to end. And if they don't get immediately what they want, they will plan another strike. And this one time, it'll be indefinite. The reason this one's only a three-day strike is because the SEIU and UTLA used some techno barble to claim that this is an unfair labor practices strike. And you have a much shorter process of getting on the streets with that. If it's a strike over wages, you have to go through mediation. You have to go through a bunch of legal hurdles before you can walk off the job. So they could get a longer strike. It's just going to take them a little longer, and they're definitely going to do it because we all know how much this woman loves to not work.
Our learning spaces are special places.
It's kind of a weird fight to watch from the sidelines, though, because you know the outcome. You know what's going to happen. the district is going to roll over and the terrorists are going to get everything they want.
Get that money!
That's how it's worked every single time. When has UTLA not gotten exactly what they've asked for?
And the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, is now weighing in on this. She sat down for an interview with Fox 11.
That's right. A full interview going up on the issue is tomorrow night. But Alex was able to ask Karen Bass what she's doing to end the strike.
We understand you are actively negotiating with both sides. Can you give us the latest in terms of what's happening?
Well, I couldn't call it negotiation.
Well, what could you call it?
Well, I couldn't call it negotiation. I could say that we are actively in discussion, but I have been deeply immersed in this from the very beginning.
I don't know if that's something you want to admit.
No.
But I have been deeply immersed in this from the very beginning, and I am really hoping that we can get to a resolution soon. You know, the fact of the matter is that the workers that are striking really are very poorly paid and have difficult conditions. And then we have the fiscal constraints that the district faces. So challenges.
Hey, look at this. She's not just on one side.
No, you can tell she wants them to get everything that they want, but she also can do math.
Yeah, but she's also not currently running for an election, so she's not pulling an Adam Schiff and just reading their talking points.
And then poorly. We have the fiscal constraints that the district faces. So challenges on both sides, but I am optimistic that we'll get there.
Are we close? I mean, where are we at? Because you're actively actually talking to both people like right over there. Yeah.
I don't know that I could say. I don't know.
Boy, she's playing coy. She's like a reality TV show host where they're teasing the big reveal.
Well, and next up, Alex asks, okay, so the union says that the district has a ton of money and the district says they're broke. So who's the liar?
The district is saying we don't have enough money.
Right.
And the SEIU is saying, yeah, you do. You got reserves.
Right.
Who's right?
Well, I think it's probably both sides are right. The question.
What?
She will not take a position.
Well, I think it's probably both sides are right. The question is, what can actually be afforded?
And now, Johnny, listen closely. Remember, this is a sit-down, in-person interview at City Hall inside the mayor's office, which is deep in the building.
Well, I think it's probably both sides are right. The question is, what can actually be afforded? But clearly, the conditions of the workers is something that has gone on for many, many years.
You hear the siren?
Oh, yes. It wouldn't be a Karen Bass press conference without the siren.
But clearly, the conditions of the workers is something that has gone on for many, many years. But you know what, Alex? It's really an example of what we face in our city, which is really profound income inequality. I mean, some of the work.
Hey, there's a rhyme.
Add that one to the list.
We voted for Mother Goose. We knew what was going to happen.
If you're feeling down, if you're feeling blue, let's get help for you. But you know what, Alex? It's really an example of what we face in our city, which is really profound income inequality. I mean.
My goodness.
But you know what, Alex? It's really an example of what we face in our city, which is really profound income inequality. I mean, some of the workers, you know, their wages are so low that they struggle with housing insecurity.
Notice how she didn't say what Cecily Meyer Cruz said, which is 30% of them are homeless.
Oh, yes.
The main issue that I've been dealing with over the last 100 days. But the reality
is the siren.
Our economy could take a dip.
That's back up.
The main issue that I've been dealing with over the last 100 days. But the reality is that our economy could take a dip. The state is going to have a deficit this year after a big reserve last year. And so that puts the district in a delicate place. But we have to figure it out.
This is the tightrope walk she's walking. She cannot advocate for anything other than the unions getting everything that they want. But she knows that there's going to be a massive budget deficit the minute that the economy starts to dip, which is right around the corner. She knows LAUSD is going to be in big trouble. Just look at the city of San Francisco. The city of San Francisco is expected to have a $1 billion budget deficit right around the corner. if that's what's happening to a city with a lot of wealth and a lot of rich people, what do you think is going to happen to LAUSD, where you have a declining enrollment? Don't forget, they get paid based on how many students show up to school. If you don't have students enrolled in the schools and you don't have students enrolled in the schools showing up to school, you don't get paid. If you want to email the show, you can do so at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. That's johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. And Randy, you're monitoring the mailbag.
That's right. And I can't read any of the ones about Ulysses Hernandez because they're all too filthy for the air. So I'll read this one reacting to Karen Bass talking about the income inequality of the SEIU. John writes, WTF, income inequality. No S. Doctors, cops, plumbers, teachers, masons make more money than people who drive school buses part-time, serve sloppy joes, or clean toilets.
There you go. Economics 101.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.